Hi, welcome to James Miller Lifeology, where you learn to simplify and transform your life. My name is James Miller. I'm a licensed psychotherapist and a composer. Thank you so much for joining me today in this podcast. Let's get started. I have a great show for you today. I'll be joined by Rosanna Ferrari, who is a prominent divorce attorney. And in today's lesson, you will learn strategies and techniques to overcome adversity. Now it's time for self-check-in. For those of you who have listened to my earlier podcasts, you know this is the time when I like to help us create scales to separate between how our emotions are and what our body is telling us. Just because our emotions feel a certain way doesn't mean our body does not have the energy to complete the tasks that we need to do today. And vice versa, just because our body may be under the weather does not mean that we can't have a positive, healthy outlook today. So for me, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 is the best I've ever felt, and 1 is the worst I've ever felt. For my emotions, I'm feeling probably about an 8. And then for my body, I woke up this morning with a little bit of a scratchy throat, so my body is probably a 4. So for you, go ahead and define what your body rates and what your emotions rate, and you may find that they may not be the same thing. There once was a boy whose father was a horse trainer. They moved from stable to stable, from ranch to ranch, training horses. One day, when he was a senior in high school, his teacher asked him to write about what he wanted to be when he grew up. He did not hesitate and wrote a 7-page paper about his aspirations to be the owner and operator of a successful horse ranch. He drew the locations of the buildings, the stables, and even a detailed house plan. 2 days later, he received his paper back with an F on the front page. He had failed the assignment. After class, he went to the teacher and asked, "Why did you fail me for this assignment?" The teacher responded, "This dream is so unrealistic for a boy like you, who has no money, no resources, and who comes from a family without stability. There is no way you will reach this goal." Then the teacher offered to allow him to rewrite the paper with more realistic goals. The boy went home and asked his father what he should do. The father said, "This is a very important decision for you, so you have to decide for yourself." After several days, the boy brought the same paper to his teacher. No changes were made. He simply said, "Keep the grade, and I will keep my dream." Now, Monty Roberts, the famous horse trainer, owns a 4,000-square-foot house in the middle of a 200-acre horse ranch, and he still has that failed school assignment now framed over his fireplace. Overcoming adversity. I once heard an old proverb that said, "Rain falls on the just and the unjust," which simply means we all will experience something negative, traumatic, or earth-shattering in our life. Regardless of our socioeconomic status, our social status, or many other qualifiers, we will experience something that is very devastating. The problem is when those situations happen, many of us don't realize that they're simply events. Events do not determine who we are. We determine who we are. We often internalize things as if we are less than, or broken, or damaged, or worthless, based on the events. For example, let's say you went through a bankruptcy. Your perception and the way you internalize yourself to be based on that bankruptcy situation could define you as someone who is not worthy of credit, not worthy of someone who can accomplish things, or perhaps a failure. But once again, that's simply what you went through. That is not who you are. Or let's say you went through a messy, heartbreaking divorce or a really bad breakup. That person said some really terrible, nasty things to you and treated you in a way that was horrible. You internalize this, that there's something wrong with you, that you're unlovable, that you're damaged, that you're wounded. And maybe you feel as if you'll never be able to marry again, find true love again. But there's a way to overcome these adversities. There's a way to move beyond the situation that we've experienced. It's a choice we all have to make. It's difficult, but no one can make this choice for you. No one can overcome this adversity but you. Initially, we may experience self-pity. We may feel vindicated or justified to feel sad and wounded and bitter. But if we feel that way, that turns into a lifestyle. It's natural to feel wounded initially, but once we continue to feel that way, then all of a sudden that becomes the mindset, that becomes our world. Let's say I were to come up and startle you. You're walking down the street and I jump out from behind a corner, good-naturedly, and all of a sudden you become really scared and frightened. Well, that makes sense because that's a natural response. But let's say you were still scared for the next hour. Well, that doesn't really make sense, does it? Because those emotions are not appropriate at that time. So if this is the case, why do we then hold on to certain emotions after the time has passed? There's ways to circumvent this. There's ways to change our world perception. But if we get lost in that self-pity component or that self-pity phase, then that self-pity turns into a lifestyle of that. It's necessary for each of us to recognize that what we went through and the experiences that we, or the experiences that transpired in our life, can actually change. It's just like a storm. A storm will always blow itself out. So self-pity is something that we, a trap that we all have to be very careful of not to fall into. And then comes discouragement. We become discouraged because we feel as if nothing is going our way, or that we become overwhelmed with frustration. Perhaps you have many people who talk about you, or you have people who may gossip about you. And so in that, we become discouraged because we feel as if we don't have any power to overcome something. And when we feel like we have no power, then we don't make any choices. We simply allow the world to transpire around us. We allow the situations to dictate the courses of our life. And sometimes beyond that, we turn to self-medication. Self-medicating is something that, just like it sounds, you medicate yourself to take away the emotions that you're experiencing. Typically, a doctor would prescribe something, and that helps alleviate some type of symptomology. But when we self-medicate, it's self-directed. And self-medication can be, for example, drinking too much, eating too much, sleeping too much. Perhaps for some people, it's promiscuity. There are many different forms of self-medication. And when we self-medicate, just as it sounds, we are not working through the emotions and the struggles and all those things which are stopping us from rising to the true destiny that we have. So when we create these self-identities based off of the situations we've gone through, we no longer then follow the hopes and dreams that we have for our life because we stunt ourselves based off of what we just experienced. The goals and dreams that you have can still come to pass. They can still come true. But if you lose sight of them, well, then you simply lose sight of them. And no one else can help you achieve those goals but you. What is your self-identity? So let's say that you and I were working together and you experienced a really traumatic loss of some sort or traumatic blow to your psyche or to your pride. And if I were to say, well, give me five good things about yourself, five things that you really appreciate about yourself, do you think you'd be able to recall those right away and then give me more self-affirmations? For most people during this time, it's very difficult to do. So what I always encourage the people with whom I work is to have them write down a list of self-affirmations. On a personal note, I've gone through things in my own life, and that is something that I do. I write down my hopes and dreams. I write down the person that I want to be, whether I feel like I'm that person right now or not. I draw on the affirmations and the beliefs that I have, maybe based on previous situations or previous encounters. And when I write those lists down, I may not believe it, but I make myself read it aloud. I make my clients read it aloud. If you're struggling to come up with some of these, then what would your peers say about you? What would your family say about you? What would your coworkers say about you? That's when you can list those strengths that you have, those areas that you really appreciate. And when you see those and when those become the forefront of your mind, that becomes the person you want to become. Because remember, whatever we focus on, whatever the direction our thoughts go, determines how our emotions are going to be. So if you're continually focusing on the things that you've lost or the traumatic experience that you have, then that is all you're going to see. That is all you're going to believe. But if you interrupt those thoughts by looking at the affirmations that you've created for yourself, looking at those beliefs that you have, and once again, you may not believe it right now, but to be able to create this list starts the energy process to start to believe those things. And then you continually read those aloud. When you speak something aloud, you're actually using your sense of hearing. So with all five senses, the way they are used is to protect us from danger, to help us understand proximity, to make sure that our body is functioning and flowing in the way it's supposed to go. So if we have these perseverative thoughts, fancy term to essentially say those thoughts that loop over and over and over again, if we have the thoughts that go over and over and over, the energy that's created with that, well then, to speak aloud and simply say stop, what we do is when we speak aloud, that sense of hearing is invoked, which then takes our environment and makes it real. In other words, I hear it, and so all the energy that I have internally has to move externally to make sure that I'm not in danger. So when I say, James, stop, and I may have to say it 100 times if I'm going through something, but when I say, James, stop, it moves the internal energy externally, which makes me listen to what's around me. And then I will use another one of my senses. Perhaps I'll use my sense of sight. If I'm, let's say I'm outside and I stare maybe at a leaf on a tree, or I look for all the details around me. So I'm using all my external senses to pull my internal thoughts and energy to make myself be aware of what's around me, not what's inside of me. Because what's inside of me is going to cause me to feel as if there's no hope, and then I'm going to continually be stuck. So we have to create a sense of external awareness. So when you write down these self-affirmations, that's really using your sense of touch. You're using a pen or pencil. You can feel what that feels like when you're writing it down. You can feel the motion of the paper. You read it by using your sense of sight. And when you say it aloud, you use your sense of hearing. So there are three of your senses you use right there. To continually speak this over and over again refocuses your thought pattern to believe those things that you say. So after you read these self-affirmations, then we switch to writing your goals down, your hopes and dreams down. Those things that you believed before this event happened affords you the ability to recreate it. So you've reset your foundation of who you are and what you are, and then you enhance it by looking at the goals and aspirations you have. Whatever is before you will become your reality. You have a power within you to pull yourself out of the adversity you've experienced. The biggest takeaway I want you to have today is to remind yourself that what you went through is simply an event. It is not who you are. For more information on this topic, please visit jamesmillerlifeology.com, and you may see the Lifeology Academy there. Enroll in the class when all hell breaks loose, and it will teach you techniques and strategies of overcoming any adversity you face. We have Rosanna Ferrari, who is a prominent divorce attorney here in West Palm Beach. Welcome to the show, Rosanna.
Hi, James. Thanks for having me.
Tell me more about your practice.
I practice exclusively in the area of marital and family law. Practicing family law since 2004, prior to being a divorce attorney, I was a prosecutor of misdemeanor crimes at the state attorney's office.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Well, thank you.
When I was in private practice, it was so rewarding to have many success stories with certain clients that I may have. For you, how is that?
Well, obviously, family law is an area where you see people at their absolute worst. Mm-hmm. They are going through a life-changing experience. And it's not a feel-good job. However, the beauty of my job is that I am part of the transformational process, so that the person that they come, that they are when they first come into my office is not the person that they are at the end of the process. And it's very rewarding when you can see somebody who's absolutely devastated come into your office and they feel like they've hit rock bottom and their life is falling apart, only, you know, 6 months later or 12 months later, look at you and say, Rosanna, this was the best thing that ever happened to me. So it's very rewarding.
I bet it is. Definitely. Now, I have the inside information that you were not born here in the United States.
Correct. I was born in Montevideo, Uruguay, South America.
Okay. So now how did you get here?
Well, my parents were immigrants. They came to the United States around 1970. And my sister Andrea was born in Boston. So we lived in Boston for quite some time. And then we later moved to New Jersey.
New Jersey. Okay. Which is still not down here in Florida. So what happened up in New Jersey to get you down here?
We moved to Florida after my sister, who was 15 or 16 at the time, found out that she was having a baby. And my mother thought it would be beneficial to the family to move to Florida and to have my sister have a baby in Florida and finish high school, which she did, and then obviously go to college, because college was never an option in our family. It's always mandatory. So,
I see.
She graduated high school, then went on to graduate from the University of Miami. And that's how we ended in Florida, really, was as a result of my sister being pregnant.
Oh, okay. So for you, you graduated from University of Miami.
I did, yes.
And then what were your plans after that?
Well, I graduated in May of 1992, and my mother, who is just gung-ho for education, in her mind, the natural progression was, okay, so you're going to go to law school. Because she had gone to law school in South America and had not finished as a result of coming to the United States. So in her mind, her children would be lawyers. And when
kind
I said...
a family legacy.
Right. So, you know, at that time, I was 23, 24 years old, and I said, no, that's your dream, not mine. I'm not going to go to law school.
And so you went to law school.
And so here I am, a lawyer. Right. So I graduated and met a boy and ended up getting pregnant with my daughter, Jordan, who I love very much. And she's 22 now.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And she's going to law school.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
A legacy of lawyers. So I was, you know, 24 years old, found out I was pregnant. I was a single parent.
Which is incredibly hard.
Absolutely. Very difficult.
And then what happened next?
Well, I found myself, I was 25 years old, and I found myself wondering, like, okay, what do I do now? Because this is not where I envisioned my life to be. In my mind, I was going to go to the University of Miami, and I was going to graduate, mm-hmm. and I was going to go places and be somebody and do things. And I found myself now being a single parent with a newborn child and trying to figure out what I was going to do. So I did what the next logical progression would be, which is apply to law school.
Well, that would make sense. Well, before we get to the next part, how did you, because you had all these new changes in your life, how did you identify yourself? So at that time, if I were to say, Rosanna, tell me who you are, what names or what type of labels would you give yourself back then?
I was very lost because everything sort of happened at Godspeed, and I was not expecting within the first year of my marriage to get married, have a baby, and end up separated from my husband, living at home with my parents. That was not how I envisioned it. I thought it was going to be the white picket fence. We were going to be a family, and we were going to live happily ever after. That, in my mind, is a life-defining moment for me because I could have relinquished to the idea of I made some poor choices, this is my life that exists today, and I'm going to abandon any hopes and dreams that I have, and I'm just going to settle in to be a worker bee. I'm so much more than that, and yes. Notwithstanding being lost in that moment, I just felt like, okay, so I'm here, what am I going to do next? And then the next idea was, all right, well, apply to law school, and I did, and in my mind, it was a no-brainer because everything had relatively fallen into place for me throughout my life, thanks to my mother.
She sounds like an awesome woman.
You know, always made sure that things happened the way they were supposed to happen, and this was really the first time in my life that I found myself with the reality of, like, okay, wait, Mom can't fix this. Mm-hmm. And I applied for law school and I did not get in.
Oh my gosh.
So that was another life-defining moment.
Yeah.
Because once again, you're at a fork in the road. So you have this experience, it's adverse. And what do you do with it now? Do you continue to push through or do you take the easy road? And of course, nothing in my, nobody takes the easy road in this family. So I decided, okay, so I didn't get into law school. What's the next best thing? I'll go back to school and I'll get a paralegal degree and I'll work in a law firm. But wanting to go to law school outweighed everything in my life.
So this was another step for you. You had to go around the bend in order to get there.
Exactly. Nothing, yes. And, you know, looking back now, everything happened exactly the way it was supposed to happen. Because it's really made me such a better lawyer because I can relate to the stories when people come into my office and they're telling me their life story and the choices that they made. And, you know, I come from a place of non-judgment because I could have very well been that story.
Yeah. Okay, so you were working at this law office as a paralegal. And then what happened next?
Well, I worked in that law firm for about 5 years, and I did get my paralegal degree. And during that time, I was a single parent, working full-time, trying to be a parent to my daughter. And, you know, thankfully, my family is very supportive, so they were helping me in any way that they could. It takes a village to raise a family. And I reapplied to law school only to get into the summer conditional program at Nova in Fort Lauderdale, which is where I graduated law school. So once again, met with the challenge of, you know, how bad do you really want this? And it was the summer of 2000, and I wanted it bad. So being a mom came second. I had to commute 45 minutes each way. I had to, you know, study 10, sometimes 12, 14 hours a day. But I did it. And it makes you stronger, you know. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger. So it's easier to quit than to just say, press on through. And I think with any experience that you have where you're trying to overcome these obstacles that come into your life, it's like one foot in front of the other, because slow progress is still progress.
Still progress.
Still progress. So that's what I did, and I started law school in the fall of 2000, graduated in 2003, and shortly after I graduated, my dad passed away.
Oh my gosh.
So here I am dealing with the death of a parent and trying to study for the Florida bar exam. Mm. I only had about 3 weeks to study for the bar exam. Once again, just like the summer conditional program, my entire life, my child, everything that meant anything to me was secondary to, I have to overcome this next obstacle.
And that's amazing that your family was able to obviously help you with Jordan.
I'm very blessed.
You certainly are blessed with that, yeah.
I, you know, but for my mother, my father, my grandmother, mm-hmm. Notwithstanding how strong that I am, I don't know that if I would be where I am today, but for my family.
Sure. Yeah.
So I give them a lot of credit.
Yeah.
For who I am today. And that's important to have a support system because sure. Everybody needs a cheerleader. And sometimes you have to be your own cheerleader.
You certainly do.
I
know.
I have found myself being my own cheerleader periodically.
Yeah.
But, you know, what doesn't kill us makes us stronger.
Certainly.
You know, and it's all about when you're in that moment, what are you going to choose? Are you going to choose to stay stuck or are you going to choose to press on through? And if you sit and you think about all of the obstacles and the logistics of how you're going to get to point A to point B, that alone can be paralyzing.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just get up and you just start moving forward in some direction, it works out. It's just you have to act. You have to push yourself. And there's days where, you know, you don't want to push yourself, but you don't have a choice. I have a 3-day rule.
And tell me about that.
So my 3-day rule is whenever something really traumatic happens in my life, or this incredible setback, whether it's in a personal relationship or something at work or something with my family, I only give myself 3 days to feel sorry for myself, to be the victim, to wallow in my misery.
Self-pity, sure.
Self-pity. Usually the first day is the worst day because that's when you're really in the thick of the emotions. And then the second day, it's not as bad as the first day, but you just want to be sad. You just want to be alone. You just feel
justified.
Yeah. I don't want to be happy. I want to be sad. And by day three, you know that that's the last day that you can allow yourself to be upset about this. So by day three, you start picking yourself up. You start climbing out of that rabbit hole. You start positive self-talk. Mm-hmm. You start saying to yourself, okay, Rosanna, it's been 3 days. This is it. After today, you're going to wake up tomorrow. You're going to put one foot in front of the other, and you're going to do what needs to be done. And that's it. You don't get to live in the past. You don't get to feel sorry for yourself. You don't get to be the victim, and you don't get to be mad about it. You just go about your business. And trust me, I want to be back in day one and two, and I want to stay stuck. But it's just, I think the more aware you are and the more cognizant that you are of like, okay, I'm in the rabbit hole right now. I'm self-loathing. Feel broken. You have to allow yourself to feel those emotions, but you also have to give yourself a limit of like, you know, I've been wallowing, I've been crying, I'm sobbing, I'm sad, but it's time to turn it around now.
Well, like in the lesson we talked about, if it becomes a lifestyle if you don't make those choices.
Exactly.
Those changes.
Exactly.
I think it's a great lesson. I think that's something we all can learn. The takeaway, one of the many takeaways from this as well, is that 3 day lesson and a 3 day limit. So going back to the whole thing, so your father passed away, and I'm so sorry about that.
Thank you.
You had 3 weeks to prepare for the bar. And then what happened beyond that?
Well, thankfully, I did pass the bar on the first try, notwithstanding. Thank you. But I had 3 weeks to study for it. And I started working at the state attorney's office and realized that financially that wasn't feasible for me. So I went out into private practice, and I was with an attorney for about 2 years. He's my mentor. He taught me everything that I know. He was the same person that I worked for before I went to law school. So I sort of went back to what I know. Yes.
Oh, wow. That's so neat.
So it's funny that I'm doing marital and family law because I did that before I went to law school. And then when I was at the state attorney's office, I did domestic violence, which has a component of family law. And then only to go back to the same mentor to be a practicing attorney in family law, and then eventually going out on my own. So I think it was all part of my journey.
When you were saying that, I was thinking that myself because, you know, the whole thing, if you hadn't gone back to become a paralegal, you probably would not have met this person. And this person was an integral part of your life.
Very much so.
And it all works together. It's
yes.
just an amazing story.
And you can't see it when you're in the thick of it. But when you look back and you reflect, there's comfort in knowing that this is all happening the way it's supposed to be happening.
That there is a plan.
There is not random.
Yeah, there's a plan in this craziness that we experience, but there is.
And that
plan.
Also brings me a lot of comfort, knowing that, you know, whenever I do have a negative experience or something tragic happens, it's like, okay, this is all part of the plan. This is supposed to happen, and it's not random chaos. And I might not like how it feels, but it's for my highest and best good.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a very spiritual person. I'm not a practicing Catholic, but I am a very religious person,
mm-hmm.
and I pray every day, meditate every day. And I always say, God, let it be your will, not mine.
Yes.
Because I don't want my ego to get in the way. I just want to surrender and relinquish. And that's also part of the process. When you are facing adversity, you're trying to overcome it, you do have to just relinquish control and stop fighting the current. I think if you move forward and you are not resistant to
yes.
whatever it is that's coming next, you're going to get through the process a lot quicker.
That is a really good point. Because I think when we feel we have to have it our own way, my life can only exist if it's done this way, we are fighting that current. We are holding ourselves back from the direction our life is supposed to go.
And I see that a lot with my divorce clients when they come in and they're very angry. They want to buck the system and that, you know, they don't want to settle their case and they want to stay stuck in that anger. A, it's costly, but B, they're preventing their own growth from happening because they're just stuck.
And it becomes a lifestyle.
Exactly.
We talked about.
Exactly.
What advice would you give someone who's maybe going through some of the things that you experienced, or, you know, it seems like the direction their life is supposed to go, that they keep having all these closed doors in front of them? What would you say to them to encourage them?
Well, number one, have faith. Have faith that this is all part of your journey and part of the process. And don't give up. Because life is long and life is hard. And some of the obstacles that we face are really lessons that we are supposed to overcome. And if you shrink away from the challenge, you will never really know what your true potential is. So stay strong, stay faithful, know that everything that is happening because it's for your highest and best good. It is all part of the process. And I know this sounds like a bunch of cliches, but in reality, when anyone really reflects on their life,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think you touched upon this in your first interview about how you were supposed to live in England. Right. And then how Lifeology came about. And, you know, although in that moment you were thinking, oh, I'm going to go live
mm-hmm.
somewhere else, you know, you ended up in Florida. And now looking back, you're like, oh, this is exactly the way that it was supposed to happen.
Yeah, it's a beautiful,
although it may not have felt that in that moment.
That's very true.
And to stay positive. Stay positive. Give yourself the time to grieve. Give yourself the time to be angry. Give yourself the time to feel sorry for yourself. But have a start and an end. For me, it's 3 days. Maybe for you, it's four. Maybe it's seven. But have a starting point and have an ending point. And then once you're done, be done.
That's the hardest part, but I think that's the most important part. One of the most important parts.
Sure. And take affirmative action. Be an active participant in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing happens to you.
You know, what I found is, in my own faith, is my higher power, who I consider God, is more concerned about my destiny. He's not concerned about my comfort. If it was just all about my comfort, then I would never grow.
Absolutely.
You know, you think about a caterpillar. You know, when they're in the chrysalis stage or they're coming out of the cocoon, if we were to help them out, their wings would never be strengthened. They would never be able to fly.
That's a very good analogy, James. Very good.
Well, thank you. And I think just, you know, so for myself, and I'm like, oh, this struggle, it's so difficult. But I know that I have to struggle in order to become that person that I'm supposed to become.
The butterfly.
Yeah. The butterfly, yeah.
The butterfly, exactly.
So, Rosanna, thank you so much for being a part of the show. I really appreciate you being able to share your story with us and all the wonderful advice you've given us.
Thank you for having me. This was a wonderful topic. I hope that many people out there really benefit from this and employ the tips and techniques that we talked about today.
I also want to thank you, the listener, for joining with us today. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast so you will be informed of the weekly episodes. Also, go to my website, jamesmillerlifeology.com, and you can see all the amazing things that are there for you. Have an amazing week.